Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino.
That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello and welcome to Las Blancas Podcast. I'm your host, Om Arvind, and today I'm joined by Yash Thakur. This was supposed to be the post-match podcast on Real Madrid Villarreal. Recording Saturday afternoon, my time, past midnight, I'm assuming, Yash's time in India. And yeah, I mean, we probably would have been done by now, in fact, with the post-match podcast on Real Madrid Villarreal, except if you've been tuned into things, what looks like the entire first match day of the new Liga F has been postponed, suspended, however you want to say it, because of a refereeing quote-unquote strike. Now, the thing with this, and this has been very confusing for a lot of people involved, and if you want to dig into labor law on this, you can, but my understanding is this is technically not a strike because the referees don't even have a real employment contract. It's not super accurate to actually call it that way. And so if that's the case, then do they have a legal right to do this, blah, blah, blah? I don't know. But it's being communicated as a strike in the press to everyone because I guess that's just the simpler way to go about it. I don't know what the other way to word it is in a way that like fits a headline, basically, because I faced that problem myself because the past couple of days has just been me posting repeated articles and updates on Managing Madrid about this situation. So just keep that in mind as we talk about this, that I think technically, legally, this can't be considered a strike, which would be important when you start to talk about disciplinary measures and, you know, sanctions against the referees and stuff like that. If that's happened, that's important to consider. But I think like functionally, what they are doing is a strike in that they're withholding their labor, which is bringing a league to a halt in order to have certain demands met. And we'll just call it a strike throughout the podcast because that's just a lot simpler for us. But just keep in mind that technically speaking, I don't think that's actually accurate. So what we're going to do on this podcast with Yash is essentially take you through the events the last few days, starting from Thursday, trying to explain exactly what has happened, what the implications of this are, what's really going on, because there's always something else going on when the RFEF is involved. And then we'll cap off the podcast talking about Freya Siri, our new signing from Racing Louisville from the NWSL. Haven't really got a lot of chance to talk about her because it just kind of happened really quickly towards the beginning of the season. And then this happened. And we were going to kind of use the post-match podcast as a chance to do it. We might as well just do that now. And so that's how we'll end the podcast. This all just kicks off out of the blue, September 8th on Thursday. It looks like we're finally smoothing everything out, right? Because it's coming out that like, yes, the league with DAZN, which I think just happened, like that announcement, that deal with DAZN, like was like a week before or something the league was going to start. And so that was finally ironed out. And people are like, okay, where's the match going to be? And it looked like it was all coming together by this point, right? We can see that some listed games on YouTube, even though it became hidden afterwards, it looks like that on the official, you know, DAZN website itself, where you'd have to pay, that a bunch of different countries can watch all of the games as well. And as we were scrambling to figure that out and realizing that it was coming into place, this whammy comes where the committee for the referees or whatever that their official representative group releases a statement on the RFEF website saying that essentially that they made a unanimous decision to not referee any match due to uncertainty over their employment and economic situation. They go on to say that they believe that women's referees deserve minimum conditions for the exercise of their activity within the professional competition, and that it is not conceivable that the refereeing establishment is the only one that remains on the sidelines of a growth that they consider to be just as necessary. That's more or less a direct quote from their statement. And then they go on to say that we look forward to stepping on the pitch again, but with the right conditions. And so that really, as far as anyone on the public side is concerned, was just absolutely out of the blue, right? We think we're underway. We think the new Liga F, which is finally fully professionalized, finally out of the RFEF's hands, replacing what was called or what we knew to be Primera Iberdrola. We thought it was on the runway and we were about to take off. And then this comes and we have immediately the real threat that match day one will be postponed because, of course, you cannot hold a professional football match without referees. And so on that day, Liga F releases a statement and a quite explosive statement, really, which I think gets to the underlying issue of what this is really about here. So the LPFF, which is the organization that runs Liga F, the new organization that runs the league, said they sent a proposal to the RFEF 2 days ago, which I suppose would be Tuesday along this timeline, where they proposed that the referees would quadruple their income. The RFEF did not respond. And there are a couple of other things that were said within it, but the key takeaways is that the LPFF proposed to negotiate directly with the referees, not the RFEF. And they said that the clubs will continue their planning as if match day one will occur. And then they kind of ended off with this really explosive quote where they say this is an embarrassing episode, again, led by the president of the RFEF, who once again uses women as a battering ram to achieve his only objective to destroy Spanish women's football. I'm not joking. That is what they said. And I assume that was kind of a cathartic statement for a lot of people. So that was day one of this fiasco. And it must be said that there's a couple things going on here, right? Obviously, the new league is now under the remit of Liga F, but the referees are still hired by the RFEF. And so there still needs to be cooperation between these two organizations. And that statement there that the RFEF is using women's football as a battering ram to achieve its objective, that's more or less kind of accurate here in that what we're talking about, as much as this is about the referees wanting, you know, an improvement to their pay is what it looks like. And we'll get into the whatever details we have on what it is they're requesting. This is about a continuing power struggle between the RFEF and the league itself, right? And their reluctance to relinquish control of that. And so I think as we just go through the timeline, we'll kind of flesh that out further in terms of what that means. So that was day one, September 8th, Thursday. September 9th, that's Friday, you have a second statement from the CTA, which is the acronym for the group that represents the referees. Again, on the official RFEF website, they say they will hold a press conference this Monday, September 12th at 12:30 p.m. local time to explain the reasons for the indefinite break in their activity. So I would assume most people would be listening to this podcast on Sunday, so that would not have happened by then. And so that would be the thing that we'd be waiting for. They also said that, or it was also revealed that the referees unanimously came to this decision after a meeting lasting more than an hour and a long day of negotiations with the LPFF, RFEF, and the CSD, the CSD being Spain's Governmental Council on Sport. And so they made a unanimous decision on Thursday. Then on Friday again, they had an hour-long talk between themselves, and they had a long day of negotiations, and they still came to the conclusion that they were going to go ahead with the quote-unquote strike, and they would explain their reasonings further on Monday. And so after this was released on that Friday, Liga F releases another statement where they respond to what the CTA said. And so basically they said that, look, that may be what you said, but all teams are still going to appear for their scheduled matches on Saturday and Sunday. And, you know, blah, blah, blah. We trust that the CTI and the RFEF will fulfill their obligations. And in the event that they don't show up, then, you know, the LPFF will cancel the matches and proceed to present, you know, disciplinary complaints. They say punitive measures, but specifically they say the disqualification of the referees, which would I would assume means that they're being removed from the duties, they're being fired. And yeah, and then they say they will initiate appropriate actions against the referees and, you know, claim damages that are generated from this. And they end again with a very explosive statement from where they say, we want to make public that we're not going to accept any blackmail from any group or institution. And then they thank, you know, the fans, teams, whatever, for the support. And so basically all you have the following day is just kind of a little bit of an escalation of the confrontation between the two groups. And basically the LPFF saying, okay, we'll just keep going. I mean, I don't know if I'll call what they're doing like, or what they did kind of like brinkmanship, but it almost appeared like that, right? As saying, okay, you say you're going to do this, we're still going to go ahead anyway. And until the clock hits, you know, the start of the match, or technically like 15 minutes after is when they ended up canceling, we're not going to do it until then. I suppose to show they're fulfilling their obligations from their half, but also I guess it's kind of a dramatic statement as well to go and do that. So that's essentially what happened today. Today we're recording this podcast, September 10th, Saturday, where the team showed up. They presented themselves at the stadium. Then 15 minutes after the scheduled time for the match, they saw no referees had showed up. So then they suspended. Now, a key thing here that we found out that they did after a picture of Real Madrid, Villarreal's letter was released is that they were going to sign a letter basically affirming that all of this had taken place and basically put it into ink. There was a letter signed, and I assume all teams did this, but specifically with Real Madrid and Villarreal, the delegates, like kind of like the representatives of both teams who tell assistant referees about substitutions and stuff, they're basically the representative on match days for the teams, right? So the delegates of both Villarreal and Real Madrid signed this letter, and then the captains of both teams did. So Ivana has her signature on that letter, and the picture was posted by Relevo. You can go to their Twitter account. It's just at Relevo and see the full picture. It's in Spanish, of course, so I've translated on the website for you, and I'll just go through some of the key things that was said in the letter here on this podcast. So they say that in accordance with the regulations, the teams here showed up at this time. They saw that none of the referees had showed up, and because of this, they decided to suspend the match. The key one here is the fourth point that they say, where they say they inform the league, the RFEF, the ETA, and all of that. This like gives them the right to basically take disciplinary actions according to the established regulations. And look, this just sounds like repetition of what I said before, and it kind of is, but this is key because when the delegates signed their name, Real Madrid's delegate, Noelia Morales Gonzalez, hand wrote a note where she said, Real Madrid is not satisfied with the application of disciplinary measures since the referees are exercising the right to strike. So basically, there was an affirmation from everyone involved on the day that, yes, this happened. Yes, the referees didn't show up. Yes, we're suspending the match. But a specific handwritten note from Real Madrid essentially saying that, look, we don't want any disciplinary measures to be taken against the referees, which is what the league had been threatening to do in response to this, which is kind of notable. And I think kind of subtly points out to the fact that there's a certain solidarity here between the referees, the teams, the players, and what's happening here on kind of a larger level, in addition to the referees wanting better pay, better conditions, whatever it is, that this is kind of a power struggle between the LPFF and the RFEF. So in what way is that the case? So here's where we kind of get into kind of how deceitful and manipulative the RFEF have been. Yeah, I know, huge shock, right? So what the situation was or was going to be was basically that the clubs pay 3,300 euros per game. and the referees for each game will receive 702 euros in total, and the remaining 2,598 go to the RFEF, and they're chalked up as management expenses. According to the RFEF, that's needed to cover travel, maintenance, clothing, etc. And basically, I think the RFEF said that, you know, they also use it to, you know, they use it for travel, right? But that, you know, they say that that's still not even enough money to cover all of that. So the proposal that the RFEF denied of the LPFF was, they said that you keep the 3,300, right? We keep that money that the clubs pay, but this money goes directly to the referees. The RFEF get absolutely none of it, right? So that was supposedly the proposal they sent 2 days before the strike was announced on Thursday. They said that this would then quadruple the amount that the referees receive. So it would be from 300 euros to 1650 for the main referee, and from 160 to 825 for each assistant. But in that distribution, apparently, they kind of ignored the fourth referee and included them in, quote unquote, other expenses, with the RFEF jumped on and said, right, we received this proposal a few days before the start of the league, which implies a profound ignorance of the refereeing establishment because it does not even contemplate the fourth referee. And so the new proposal from the RFEF is 21,000 euros per game, which would mean a total of 5 million euros per season. But there is no, or up until this point, as we know, there has been no statement about how that money will be distributed, simply that the RFEF decides the distribution, which is kind of fishy, right? So basically, we're at a point where the RFEF had all the power for so long. Remember, because before there was Liga F, there was Primera Iberdrola. They had all the power to negotiate with the referees and basically give them better pay, right? They could have given them the 21,000 or had the clubs pay 21,000 at any point in time and then split it up however they want to do. 2 days before the league is supposed to start, you have, out of the blue, the strike emerge, where the RFEF then says to Liga F, well, why aren't you helping out the referees? Now, I will say that if it's true that Liga F only sent this proposal 2 days before the day of the strike and kind of ignored the fourth referee, that's kind of a bad look on them. And it's not to say that they're completely, you know, exempt from any sort of criticism here. In general, it's been like kind of a haphazard, you know, organization and creation of the league, right? We only got the logo and the name a week, week and a half, 2 weeks before the league started. The TV deal was only ironed out until then. Like, all of this is happening last minute. And this is not to say that no questions should be asked of them, but the RFEF had basically total power in this entire situation for such a long time. And they very strategically positioned themselves right before the league was going to start, with very little time for there to be an adequate response to then say, oh, we're going on strike and match day one is not going to happen, right? And we know as a fact, because of things we've covered on this podcast, because of things you guys have read, that the RFEF had done their utmost to prevent the league from falling out of their hands, whether that was doing shenanigans with TV deals, where they presented Real Madrid, Barcelona, and other clubs as, you know, the villains preventing there being a unified TV deal in the league, when in reality they were rejecting it because the RFEF was going to take, you know, a ridiculous percentage of the TV revenue just for themselves. We know that the entire time, the entire history of the RFEF has been to hold on to this league and try to milk it for whatever it's worth. Now, Jose Manuel Amoros at Amoros 4 on Twitter kind of laid out this information that I've already given you in terms of the amounts and everything, and then kind of posited something interesting. He basically asked the question, why is it that the RFEF is giving this 21,000 euro figure? Where did that come from? He's saying, if you multiply that by 240 games, that makes 5 million euros, which coincidentally is the budget that CSD is going to give the Liga F for organization expenses of a professional league. So what Jose Manuel Amoros is saying is that the RFEF wants all that money after losing the league for this season. And he also points out that why are the refs going along with this? Because if they don't, they're done for. Because remember, the RFEF hire the referees, and that gives them an immense amount of power to kind of push them into this action. So we have a pretty blatant situation where, you know, I don't know if what Amoros is saying specifically to that motivation of the 5 million per year is correct, but it's very, very obvious that the RFEF is trying to get more money here that can then be redirected to themselves. And in the process, almost as kind of a slight, almost as kind of a power play, huge middle finger to the league saying, oh, we're going to screw up match day one. And, you know, oh, oopsie. Always at the same time trying to position themselves as doing this in defense of the referees themselves, which is the disgusting thing about this. I would say the final straw on the camel's back with the RFEF happened like a long time ago for me. But for whatever reason, this one has just infuriated me to the next level with what it is they're doing here. The way they have used the refs to put a stopper, like, I mean, this is, think about how, what a huge letdown this is, what a hugely bad look this is for the league, right? To not even be able to organize and put on time their main schedule, right? Like, I mean, it's acting in extremely bad faith, essentially to, again, extract whatever profit they can, which is the only reason they've seen any value in the Women's League whatsoever is whenever they can milk it for cash. Like, it's rank corruption is what it is. And that's basically the situation. Yash, I know you took a bunch of notes as well, but I don't know if I left anything there for you, but highly possible I missed something. You can chime in with any other details that you noticed or give your opinion on the situation.
Yeah, no, I mean, you covered it brilliantly, and the timeline was like perfect from what I have in my notes as well. It's about the rights of the referees as well. Like, obviously, since the league is going professional, they want a better working condition. They basically want a contractual condition where they have a proper working contract in the first place. But it's also on the in the bigger scale, it's more about the power struggle than about the referees themselves, because you see the referees, the conditions that are being offered by LPFF, if you read through them, they seem quite good. Like, they are offering them 3300 directly to the referees, which will not involve any sort of RFEF involvement. So all the money would go to them. That would increase their revenue as well. But the thing is, they cannot take that offer and run with it. They have to agree with the side of RFEF, because basically RFEF has them at gunpoint, saying if you don't, you are not going to be able to like referee again. That is basically the unsaid threat or whatever. Like, that is the problem here. Everyone wants better conditions for them, but at the end of it, nobody is winning in this power struggle actually. And the one thing that is suffering here is the Women's League. Like, that is the one thing that should have not happened. This has been going on for a while. Like, RFEF has treated the Women's League like a second thought, like an afterthought for a long time, with the change, with the hope that the professionalization of the league would resolve this. We are here sitting discussing this on match day one, when we should be discussing how Real Madrid fared against Villarreal. And it's not just frustrating for the fans, but it's also frustrating for the players as well. Like, if you saw Aitana's tweet, like, she tweeted about the situation, saying it's the same old game. Like, the ones suffering here are the players again. Like, there's so much to do again. Like, in the build up to the opener of the league, one would have expected, like, given how the summer went for women's football in all aspects, like in Europe, in South America, there was a lot of interest in Africa as well. Like, there were major tournaments that generated a lot of hype. Then, although there was not a clear timeline, everything happened last minute with the Spanish league, but there was now a TV deal in place which would like show you 3 games for free on YouTube, and then other with a subscription plan as well. And there would have been more cameras in the stadium, so you would get better angles and stuff. So everything seemed like it would go well, and everyone was looking forward to it, because there were big games scheduled for the first opening week: Real Sociedad versus Atleti, Villarreal versus Real Madrid. It was all there, and then this happens. And it's not like this should this shouldn't have been discussed, or this should have been resolved before. And I think there must have been talks going on the internal side, but at the end, this is the situation, and we are not even sure if this is going to be resolved come the next match day. So we might possibly see a suspension of another match day. We'll have to wait for what statement the CTA basically have to put out on Monday, but things don't look good. I mean, this is not a great look for a league that has just turned professional. Like, I don't know. This internal power battle between two federations is just, the one that loses here is women's football in the end. And it's pathetic in the end, to be honest.
Yeah, and I think the thing here is what's so frustrating is the RFEF really has the power in this situation. Even though the league is fully professional, even though the league is the one negotiating the TV deals, they have the teams, they have the players, you can't do anything without referees. And theoretically, the RFEF could just keep doing this indefinitely. And I think that's why the league is a bit urgent in threatening, you know, these disciplinary actions, right? Because we kind of want to force the issue here. But in the end, the referees are the ones who get caught up on this because, all right, if they go along with the strike, then potentially they can be in big trouble with the league. If they don't go on with it, then they're most definitely in real trouble with the RFEF. So what do they kind of do here? And so the RFEF basically are sitting there, right? They're the only ones who won't suffer at all, right? Think about it, right? They're the only ones who only have something to gain and nothing to lose from this, except their reputation, which is already absolute shit, right? Everyone who knows anything about the situation already absolutely hates them. And to be frank, they don't care at all. Right, even in men's football, what is the RFEF's reputation? Not great, right? Who around actually likes Luis Rubiales, right? No one. So if that's all they have to lose, then they have nothing to lose because the reputation doesn't exist in the first place, right? The LPFF has a lot to lose, right? Because they're the ones who run the league, right? The referees have a lot to lose in both situations, and the RFEF has nothing to lose. So that's what's so frustrating about this. And to me, it's not super obvious how this goes forward without the RFEF winning in some way, which is really frustrating. Although I will say, I think it's important not to bend over immediately because I think the 21,000 figure is great. I think obviously the league's initial offer was a lot better than what the RFEF were doing, but I think 21,000 is even better. It is just absolutely key that the RFEF do not take any of that money, or at least close to a significant amount of that money, right? The vast majority of that has to go to the referees because they are the ones doing the actual work, right? And it's an absolute joke that the RFEF was taking the vast majority of the previous sum and essentially giving a pittance to those referees in the previous situation. There is very much legitimate concerns and requests in the referees here because they do deserve a proper contract. They do deserve a better contract. If you're going to go fully professional and tout all these things with the TV deals and all these potential benefits for players in the future and stuff, the referees have to be lifted up as well. It's just that this is so obviously a power play from the RFEF and more directly a play for money. And it's just so frustrating. It's so frustrating that we can go so far and get so far away from them, yet just in certain ways, it seems like we can never escape them. And yet here we are. So yeah, we'll try to keep you updated with the situation as much as we can, as quickly as we can. I've been scrambling on the website at all sorts of hours to try to ensure that we can continue to have the most up-to-date information on this. And we'll just see what happens. On Monday, things are going to change pretty quickly in terms of the information we have based on the statement. And we should start getting a sense of whether the second match day will have to be postponed as well. Needless to say, like, each match day that's postponed just makes the season more and more of a disaster, because where do you put these games, right? Do you extend the end of the season even further? I mean, we have a World Cup coming up. Like, it's just, I don't know, like, it just ruins so many things. And I don't know, we'll just have to see what happens with it.
And this is on top of like the Spanish league is the longest league that exists in Europe, like with 16 teams and stuff. They already play a lot of games, so there isn't much scope to rearrange these fixtures at all. There are multiple cup competitions as well. I don't know, like this is just gonna be terrible for players again, who are gonna be overworked come the end of the season when the Champions League comes around for the big teams. Then there's Copa as well, then they have included some sort of Super Cup as well. So it's not fair on the players to be like to demand of them to be playing every 3 days for a whole month. Like that's inhuman at the end. And I don't know, like there isn't much rescheduling option moving forward, so it's just a disaster.
All right, I think that about wraps it up in terms of trying to explain the whole refereeing issue and, you know, the postponement issue. And obviously we'll continue to try to keep you updated with that. Just check Las Blancas Twitter, check Managing Madrid Twitter, and check the website. We'll move on to the next topic now, and really the last topic on this podcast. So we take the opportunity to talk about Freya Siri Olofsson, who I think herself wants to be known as Freya Siri, so that's what we'll call her. She came from Racing Louisville from the NWSL, and she originally plied her trade in her home country in Sweden from 2015 to 2020. And along the way, she overcame an ACL injury to then make her move to the NWSL in 2021. And she was basically a regular at Racing. She racked up 22 appearances last season. And before she signed from Real Madrid this season, she played an additional 15 matches. The kind of like positive outlook on this is that she is proper defensive midfielder, I guess you could say, that theoretically fills a longstanding void in Madrid's midfield, right? What is a thing that we've complained on and off about since essentially the 1920 season when we lost Ainhoa Campo? It's that we don't have a true defensive midfielder for so long. Maite is the one that had to play in that role. And kind of since then, you know, we played Tere there, we've tried different things, we moved to double pivots, but we never really had someone who we consider, oh, this is a true six who can play in that single pivot role, right? Even with all the midfield signings we made this season, we don't really have that player. Like Toledi is not that player in terms of being at her best. Like she can do it, but that's because Toledi can do everything. But if you're asking what is her best position, it's as a box-to-box midfielder. We are obviously is like this number 10, number 8 attacking midfielder type who has a very broad skill set. But if you're playing her as a defensive midfielder, something has gone very wrong. We must be in the most epic injury crisis imaginable if that's happening, right? So this was a need. Now the question is this 24-year-old the actual solution to this team's, this hole that exists in Madrid's midfield? And this is why I have Yash on. He can go into a little bit more detail about this, but from my initial impression, it doesn't seem like that's actually the case. And that kind of like the best case scenario is that she becomes like a solid backup, but doesn't really seem like a player who's like starter quality from the people who've regularly watched her in terms of analysts who have regularly watched her, from looking at her statistical profile, because we do have advanced stats because she played in the NWSL American Soccer Analysis. A website everyone should check out has advanced stats on her, specifically using their goal added metric, which is an all-in-one metric, the best one in my opinion out there, that evaluates what is their essential contribution to goals per game or per 96 minutes. It consolidates all the information they have, puts it into that stat, and says this is what the statistic is, and then it breaks it down into, you know, various categories like interrupting, shooting, receiving, and all of that. And besides interrupting, where she showed up decently last season and not so decently this season, doesn't paint her in the best of light. That being said, goal added can be hit or miss with defensive midfielders. What it's really good at is evaluating attackers. And then there's more room for nuance the farther back you go on the position chart. But even eye test wise, I'm not super sure that it looks at her like maybe in the light that it might like Tere or others, right? So we'll have to see how it pans out, right? I'm definitely reserving a lot of judgment because I haven't spent a lot of time watching her. But Yash, what's your take on this transfer?
Okay, so we were in for this player like last year as well. Towards the end of the window, there were rumors that we are probably going to sign her for 100k euros. So I had seen some games from Louisville before this rumor came around, but after that I tried to watch as much as I could, and I've done the same this time around as well. The thing is, as you mentioned before, this signing addresses a position that we have all been screaming for. Like, we have it fills an obvious void in the defensive midfield position by bringing in a natural defensive midfielder. But last season, this signing would have made a little sense, because last season our midfield looked a bit different. There were places up for grabs. Because last season, at any point of time, our midfield could have been a combination of Zornosa, Tere, Maite, and Kasi. So there were positions up for grab. Like, you can probably argue that the only player that had a fixed role was Zornosa. So there were two places up for grabs at all times. So if she had come around last season, it would have made a little sense. This season, it makes less sense because our midfield has changed. Like, if you look at our midfield composition now, Caroline Weir is gonna be a short shot starter, because she adds that quality that nobody else in the midfield can, in the current setup at least, and she is a world-class player, so she is definitely going to start. Then you have Toletti, which I feel should start because she offers a lot of balance. She can compensate on the offensive side as well as the defensive side. So we need a player of that caliber who can do both things at a very high level. So Toletti is that. There's just one position that is up for grabs now, and that will probably be decided based on what sort of opponent we are playing. Or if it comes to that, I think Tere might nab it from others, and Zornosa, Maite would have to play a sort of substitute role. Or Maite can also be deployed as the backup on the right wing option, where she comes in and operates centrally. That's another thing. But that is the thing. There's only one position up for grabs. It's not like Freya can play multiple roles in midfield. It's not like she can be the controller in midfield alongside somebody else. It's not like she can be the advanced midfielder who can do bits and replace somebody else. So that's two positions gone. That's just one position, because we are probably going to play like 4-3-3. It's difficult to make a lot of sense about this move now. Plus, there's an added pressure with the amount that is being reported. Like, for 235,000 euros, that's a lot of money. Like, if you think about it, like, Pernille Harder, who is possibly or arguably now the highest paid women's transfer ever, because like Barcelona claiming they didn't pay 400 for Kira Walsh. That's another topic, but that makes Pernille Harder the highest paid women's football transfer ever. That's just 115k more than what we have paid for Freya Olofsson. I'm not saying she is a bad player, but that money could have been like better utilized. Talking about the player, like, she is a proper destroyer in midfield. That is what I would describe her as. That's her best role. She isn't much of a deep lying playmaker who can like ping passes from deep or like kickstart attacks from deep. No, she is very reserved in possession when it comes to her passing. She can circulate the ball in short and medium ranges, but over the long range, her passing isn't that good. She is pretty physical. Like, if you have managed to see her first interview with Real Madrid, that is what she repeatedly emphasizes. And that's true, because she is like quite physically dominant. So she manages to get like win the ball in those sort of 1v1 physical duels. But in terms of tackling and intercepting as well, there's room for improvement too. So it doesn't feel like a move that is going to obviously take us to the next level. It adds depth. For sure, it adds depth in a position that we haven't had since we became Real Madrid, since Ainhoa left. But it feels like we could have done better. This is coming in the same window when Kira Walsh was available, apparently. So it also stings that bit. Yeah, probably Kira Walsh wouldn't want to join Madrid. That's another case. But like, you have to you have to like take that into account. There was also Karen Holmgaard who moved this summer to Everton. Like, you could have at least, like, we could have at least tried to like sway her with this sort of money. So that is the thing. I feel there were better options in the market this summer to address that position. This signing, if it would have happened like last summer, it would have made a bit more sense because our midfield looked very different last summer. But currently our midfield has two of the, like, one absolutely, well, I would say two absolutely world-class player in Tolletti and Weir. But if you want to like make it debatable, like, Tolletti is one of the best midfielders in the league at the very least. So I don't know, like, it feels weird. So I don't know what more to say about it, other than this feels like a very very sideways move, sort of, in which we could have done significantly better, in my opinion. Because even if you go about looking at the stats, like Om mentioned before, if you go to American Soccer Analysis and look at the goals added metrics, they aren't really that standout, even in like actions that one would consider her strengths, which is like interrupting play. It's not really that eye-catching numbers. Because if you look at her goals added above or below average, they look like for her position, it's way below average for last season and for this season as well. So statistically, she isn't really an eye-catching player. I hope like she does well for us. Obviously, there is no one thing that we are going to like be rooting against her or anything. We want her to succeed, obviously. And I think like she could be a very good bench option for us to help us control games in times when we are in need of having some sort of defensive solidity by putting her in. But is she a starter sort of player, which when you are paying 135k for a player, you expect that at least, or 235k for a player, you expect that at least. So I don't know. I'm not sure that she is an improvement upon, say, Tere at the DM role, because with Tere, you do get the disrupting of the opposition play while also having the sort of passing capabilities from the deep that can like kickstart an attack and send us forward pretty quickly. I don't think that is an option there. So I'm not very high on the signing. We have made it. I welcome her with open arms. But yeah, her impact, her direct impact on the side and how we play might not be as big as the fee, I would say.
Yeah, it seems very much like a lateral move. And I think the thing is like, well, there's a couple of things here. One, it seems like Ana Rosell has this tendency to where, like, once she latches onto a player, she just will keep going for them, right? It's the same thing with Catalin Souza, right? Like, rejected in the past. And when it maybe seems like, all right, at this particular moment in time, it no longer makes sense or it doesn't make sense, she still goes for them anyway, right? It's like, I've latched onto this target. I'm going to pursue it no matter what, which seems like a weird way of going about transfer business. I know football directors tend to have a couple players like that, but for it to direct, you know, a significant portion of the transfer business is a bit strange. But yeah, I mean, in terms of Freya, like, I guess the main argument you can make as to why this is like a really good move is to kind of point out, like, just in general, the DM market in women's football, and you could probably even say the same for men's football, is kind of thin. And so looking for great options, like when you take off the table the likes of Oberdorf, Walsh, you know, Patri, like the elite defensive midfielders of the world, like, it's a pretty steep drop off. And if you can't get them, okay, who are you looking for? I mean, I'm sure you would have counters to that. I mean, you mentioned Holmgaard, and I'm sure there are other players like that. But then the question becomes, okay, you only have these limited, you know, options. How much are they then worth? And my thing is, if it's 235K, what is the cost benefit of simply not spending that at all? And let's say, for example, playing Tere in that role. I don't know. It seems to me like you could have just not spent that money and waited for an opportune moment to go for a more elite player or look for, you know, a hidden gem that appears. So, I think that's kind of the main question. And given Rozelle's kind of obsession about chasing these players, I do wonder what exactly the merit was of spending that much money. That being said, I think it adds pretty solid depth. I think she does, in a sense, kind of fill a need, and we'll see how it goes forward, right? Next to players like, you know, Maite, Tere, Toletti, Weir, probably deficiencies on the ball can be covered. But when you look in terms of the long-term future, because again, Real Madrid is a project where we're looking, where are we 2 years from now? I don't think this is one for that type of view. I think it's a short-term gap that says, okay, we have a need now, let's fill it. And we should be looking probably to say, all right, then what is the next move going forward, right? Like, my dream would be someone like Oberdorf. Who knows whether that ever be realistic, because once her contract is up, every single club worth their salt in the world will be going after her, and Real Madrid will not be best positioned to go and get her. But it would be kind of crazy if Barca got Oberdorf, Walsh, and Patry. Like, I don't know if that would happen, but there's Lyon, right? There's PSG, even given how messed up they are. They're the WSL club. I don't know. Like, it just feels like, all right, you just kind of shrug your shoulders at this one and say, let's see how it goes. And I don't know if there's that much more to say about that. All right. That brings us to the end of this one. Two very different topics, but I think covered on things that needed to be covered. One was explaining what the hell is going on with the league situation, referees and all of that. And I hope Yash and I gave a useful rundown of the events, and then also like what's driving this, and then also talking about Freya Siri. I think it's the first time really getting the chance to talk about her, and hopefully you took something away from that as well. So hopefully, fingers crossed, we will be with you next week to cover actual football. If not, it'll probably be to update you on why football is not being played. All right, Yash, as always, man, a pleasure, and Ala Madrid.
Ala Madrid.
Social Podcast Network.
Lucky Land Casino asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.